President Obama gave a speech on Monday to mark the 5 years since the collapse of Lehman Brothers, the first domino to fall in the Great Recession that followed. He criticized Republicans for threatening to tank the recovery to score political points with the upcoming budget and debt ceiling deadlines. But House Speaker John Boehner says Obama needs to work with Republicans to address what Boehner calls America's spending problem. In today's Big Question, we'll ask you, which party has the better approach to dealing with the economy? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to talk about the debates taking place in Washington over economic issues these days, and we'll talk about what it'll take to get the economy rolling again. And we'll also welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are very happy to have back with us Stephen Smith, professor of political science and the director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, President Obama did give this speech on Monday. He really didn't hold back in criticizing Republicans, saying that they were willing to tank the economy to score political points. He said that he was not going to back down on his principles in the weeks ahead. Let's take a listen to an excerpt of what he had to say on Monday.
I will not negotiate over whether or not America keeps its word and meets its obligations. I will not negotiate over the full faith and credit of the United States. This country has worked too hard for too long to dig out of a crisis just to see their elected representatives here in Washington purposely cause another crisis.
So, says that we've worked too long, too hard, we've invested too much in this recovery. First, what kind of financial shape are we in right now compared to September of 2008?
Well, gradually improving. The economy, of course, remains sluggish. The recovery from the Great Recession is painfully slow, but step by step, conditions are improving. On the fiscal front, the federal government's budget is just gradually improving. We were at a deficit level of, you know, $1.3, $1.4 trillion a couple of years ago, and this year's deficit's probably going to be half that. So we're kind of headed in the right direction. Just to give you some feel for that, our deficit got up to about 10% of our GDP, the size of our economy, a couple of years ago, and this year it's probably going to be about 4%. So on the fiscal front, things are gradually improving.
Say again how much improved the deficit is?
From 10% of GDP 3-4 years ago to 4% of GDP this year. So a pretty substantial improvement in the federal government's fiscal picture, due largely, of course, to the recovery and you know, the fact that people are making some money again, and when they do that, they pay more taxes, revenues are up. And when the economy improves, people get jobs, unemployment compensation, demands on Medicaid and other programs subsides a little.
But I did also see a report from the Census Bureau that said that, for instance, when it comes to wages, things haven't improved very much at all for most Americans. More affluent Americans have recovered their losses, but wages have been just stagnant for the rest of us.
Well, that's right. I think a continuing and a long-term issue in American society and politics is increasing economic inequality, with you know, the middle class struggling. Many of the high-paying manufacturing jobs, of course, have been disappearing as a long-term trend, but many of them were lost very quickly during the Great Recession, and they're not coming back.
Yeah. So when President Obama says he's not going to allow Republicans to tank the economy, what's he talking about?
Well, What we face at roughly November 1st, it may be a few days earlier or a few days later, is the federal debt limit again. That's the limit in law that sets a cap on how much the federal government can borrow overall. That has to be increased periodically because these annual deficits require that we borrow money and then we bump up against that ceiling. In 2011, remember, we had faced a crisis over that debt ceiling in the summer of that year. And the Republicans insisted on deep, deep spending cuts as a condition for allowing the debt limit bill to go through Congress. They, of course, failed to meet the deadline. And the stock market reacted. I think it was about a 15% decline in the major markets. The credit rating of the federal government suffered, which made it more expensive for the federal government to borrow in the future. And consumer confidence sank, which surely helped slow the already slow recovery. So there really is a proven consequence to not passing an increase in the debt limit on time. And it looks like that's going to have to be around November 1st.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are the Republicans insisting on in order to raise the debt limit?
Well, it's not quite clear yet. The most we can say at this point is that the current talk is that they will insist that the implementation of the health care reform, Obamacare, which a term that all sides use now, be delayed. You know, the major parts of it are to be implemented this fall, other parts over the course of the next year or so, and they want a delay put in place. But that's just talk. They're already insisting that Obamacare implementation be defunded, that is, no funding for it, as a condition for getting spending bills in place, which are due by October 1. So there's two deadlines here. There's the October 1 deadline for simply approving authority to spend money by government agencies. That's an annual deadline. And then there's this roughly November 1 deadline when this debt limit has to be increased. Republicans are seeking leverage with the president and the Democrats in both cases, and they've been struggling over the last few months to figure out exactly what kind of leverage, what kinds of conditions they want to impose. And the story's still evolving. The Republicans in the House are meeting at this moment. They were scheduled to meet at 8 a.m. Eastern time to discuss the most recent leadership plan for getting the spending bills in place by October 1. And it appears that they're going to include a provision in their version of spending authority that would deny funding for implementing the health care plan.
Okay. Well, the House Speaker John Boehner also said that President Obama needs to rise above partisanship and work with Republicans to address America's spending problem. What is America's spending problem now if the deficit has been halved?
Well, it is going in the right direction for the next few years. We do have a long-term problem. Over the next few years, we're in reasonably good shape. But over the long haul, we've done a couple of things that have made things more difficult for ourselves. Most importantly, last January, as a part of a deal to get spending authority in place for government agencies, we made the Bush tax cuts permanent. The effect of that is to reduce federal revenues over the long run really adds to the long-term deficit projections. once we get past the next 4 or 5 years, those permanent tax cuts, unless changed, are going to take a hit on the deficit. The other big thing, of course, is simple demographics. We have an aging population that needs more and more health care. And so our health care costs, even with Obamacare, continued to rise. Obamacare does something about it, but it's really quite modest given the long-term demographic trends. So our health care programs are projected to continue to increase in their cost in absolute dollars and as a percent of the GDP. And so we still have pretty serious fiscal challenges on our hands. Whether we keep Obamacare or not, whether we defund it or just keep the current plan in place, we're still going to have a substantial challenge in getting a grip on health care costs at the federal level and in every other part of American society.
We are talking with Stephen Smith. He's a professor of political science. He's also the director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. And we are talking about the politics of the economy. And in today's big question, we welcome all of your questions about the economic issues that are being debated in Washington today. And we wonder which party you think has the better approach. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We also welcome you to tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So what did you think of President Obama's speech lashing out at Republicans, saying they're holding the economy hostage? Is he right, or is he the one who's not playing ball? Do you support or oppose the GOP's tough stance on spending? Do you think that Obamacare should be defunded or delayed? We welcome your input as we talk about the politics of the economy here on the Ideas Network. This is our big question segment. We are talking about the economy and the politics of the economy and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. The Republicans have also proposed a $40 billion cut in the food stamp program, and there's going to be a vote on that later this week in the House of Representatives. This is more than what was anticipated. Andy on Facebook says he opposes the Republican plan to cut food stamps. He says children need food to grow and be good students. Wages are flat or declining in this country, and addressing unemployment has taken a back seat to deficit reduction. People need to eat. Well, I'll talk a little bit about the debate over the food stamp program, Professor Smith.
Well, it's a complicated situation. The Senate has passed, as Congress usually does every 4 or 5 years, a bill that combines the farm programs, the subsidies and insurance, crop insurance programs for farmers, with the SNAP program or the food stamp program. And that's the way it's usually done. A coalition of agriculture-oriented legislators with more urban legislators who support food stamps has kept the two programs going in that way for now more than a half a century. This year, for the first time, the House Republicans could not pass the farm bill in that form. So they split it into two parts, and they passed the farm part that continues subsidies and insurance for farmers, but they delayed action on the food stamp part, in large part because conservatives in the Republican Party in the House didn't think that they had cut food stamps enough. So they've now come up with a plan that cuts it by $40 billion over 10 years, in contrast to the Senate bill, which did one-tenth of that. They cut it by $4 billion over 10 years. So there's a huge difference between the two houses. It's not clear that the House version, even at $40 billion, can pass, because no Democrats will vote for that. It may even be difficult to get all Republicans to vote for it. So we'll see what happens probably on Thursday. If they pass it with that deep cut, then presumably the two House bills will go to a conference committee with the Senate bill. And legislators for both houses will try to negotiate those differences, but there's no reason to be optimistic that they can come up with a compromise between those two really radically different proposals.
Yeah, does what kind of an impact would this have? What point are the House Republicans trying to make?
There is a what we might call, what we should call, the Tea Party faction. They're an organized caucus. As the Tea Party caucus in the House, they're just like you might recall that the Tea Party movement originated in the late Bush administration among conservatives who were frustrated that too much compromising had been done by Republicans during the Bush years, that not enough had been done to reduce the deficit, that not enough of the social agenda had been enacted, and that they were done compromising. That group, of course, was organized in the House of Representatives, in part under the leadership at first of Michelle Bachmann. And now, roughly 30-40% of House Republicans adhere to a view that they really ought to maximize their leverage with the Democrats and with the White House, to try to get their, policies in place. And they should do this at almost every turn, whether it's the farm bill or immigration, or federal spending or the debt limit. They really ought to maximize, their leverage. This is creating a serious problem for their own leadership. Speaker Boehner is in a very difficult spot. He doesn't want his party to get blamed for creating chaos in the economy or preventing food stamps from being reauthorized and so on. But he has a very hard time moving anything when he can't count on the support of Democrats and when a third or 40% of his own party is insisting on a fairly radical approach to policymaking.
Diane in Madison is with us. Hello, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi. I just would like to comment. I believe that this whole food stamp issue has gotten out of control. I strongly, strongly believe that food should never, ever, ever become such a strong political issue in this country. People need to eat. People are poor, losing their jobs, and I don't understand the logic or the illogic behind all of this debate, and I think that the politicians should turn their attention to other important matters other than food.
All right, thank you very much, Diane. Well, again, how do the Republicans justify a $40 billion cut in food stamps?
A couple of ways, one of which is explicit and one of which is only implicit. The explicit one is that during the Great Recession just a few years ago, the food stamp program was expanded to meet growing needs in a period of hard times. And so part of their rationale, which they're quite willing to express, is that it's time to trim this back to pre-recession levels and maybe make even deeper cuts because we have this long-term deficit problem and every program ought to be on the chopping block. The implicit argument is a more fundamental one, and that is that there are many Republicans, maybe most, who think that the federal government simply encourages people to stay on poverty, and that by creating, this is the old argument about social welfare programs in general. Food stamps is just another case. What we ought to do is to minimize the incentives to stay unemployed. We ought to maximize the incentives to get reeducated, to go find a job, and to fend for yourself. And the more we allow people to be dependent on government, including food stamps, then the more we do that, the less likely, the more people we are who are not going to be productive economic citizens. That sounds kind of mean-spirited, but it represents a serious, widespread point of view among Republicans that fundamentally changing the incentives in American society is necessary.
Bill on Facebook asks, what is the status of the sequestration?
It's still in place and will continue to kick in another $100 billion worth of deficit reduction. These across-the-board cuts split roughly evenly between defense and domestic discretionary programs each year. Unless spending bills are adopted that alter that law. And so the Democrats in Congress have been arguing that next year, the funding for next year, which is, as I say, due on October 1st, should loosen up on those requirements on both the defense and the domestic side. The House Republicans appear to be coming forward with a spending bill that will fund the federal government at almost precisely what the sequestration law requires, another $100 billion worth of cuts. So the two parties are far apart on this question. And that's one reason why Speaker Boehner cannot count on Democratic votes in the House for his spending bill. The Democrats want to alter the sequestration provisions. They think it's too deep and mindless to have these kinds of across-the-board cuts. The Republicans are insisting on sticking to their guns. In fact, there are a few Republicans, maybe as many as 30% of House Republicans, who will support another proposal which would make the cuts even deeper than the sequestration cuts.
We'll pick up on this after we check news. We are talking about politics and the economy. And which political party do you think has the better approach to dealing with the economy? We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a political analyst who's also an expert on economic issues, talking about the renewed focus on the economy in Washington, D.C. this week with the fifth anniversary of the financial collapse being marked this week and debate heating up over budget cuts and the debt ceiling as those deadlines are looming. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest, and we're welcoming your thoughts on whether you think one political party over the other has a better approach to dealing with the economy. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37 on this Wednesday, September 18th. Our guest is Stephen Smith, professor of political science and director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. And let's take another call. Ralph in Suamico is with us now. Hi, Ralph.
Yes, good morning. I kind of been following this ever since I lost a whole pile of money about 10 years ago. And if I recall, when this whole thing blew up and Hank Paulson said we need $800 billion to help out the investment banks, that both John McCain and Barack Obama rushed to Washington so they could pass that bill. So as long as we've got politicians that are in the pocket of investment banks, nothing's going to change. You know, even the too big to fail was supposed to be resolved with the Dodd-Frank bill, but then they inserted a wording in there that said that they would protect the investment banks from failure. So as long as we have banks spending money that they don't have and knowing that the government's going to bail them out, we're never going to have a balanced budget.
Professor Smith?
Well, there's a complex set of issues there that Ralph raises, all important. The bailout of the banks really hasn't cost us anything. They've paid the money back with interest. So if anything, we made a bit of money on that investment. There is a larger issue, and that is in a capitalistic society, we depend on private sector financial institutions to run most of our business. Capital flows from business to business, borrowing and lending, the processing of cash, are all done, you know, mainly done in the private sector. It's inevitable that competitive forces lead to the creation of fairly large institutions on which all of our well-being depends. And we really don't want them to fail. We we want them to succeed. We want them to be competitive. And we don't want to have to bail them out if they're endangered by their own mistakes. So we have this tension between allowing them to operate freely without undue government regulation, to be as efficient as possible, and on the other hand, to make sure they don't make mistakes, which requires oversight and regulation. There is a pretty serious debate about whether or not Dodd-Frank is adequate. And it's also true that the largest banks have grown even larger since Dodd-Frank was enacted. But Dodd-Frank, unfortunately, really hasn't been fully implemented. We haven't really given it a fair test. And so I think we're still a bit vulnerable on the financial sector side. So there are very serious public policy questions that Ralph raises, but I don't think that the deficit really is much of an issue in that case.
Mm-hmm. It was Paul on Facebook who says both parties are tools of elite corporations and banks with no interest in fixing the economy for the rest of us. What's your reaction to that?
That's a point of view that more and more Democrats, and I think more and more Democratic politicians, are beginning to be quite sensitive to. There is, I think, some growing populism on both the right and the left, but on the left, I think it's expanding, and we may see some challenges to kind of a capital liberalism in the Democratic Party. But it is perfectly true that we live in a capitalist society where most investment is done through the private sector, through very, very large institutions. And the government, whether run by a Republican or a Democrat, operates largely in a manner compatible with that private sector system. There's no doubt about that.
Next we go to Ruth in Madison. Hello, Ruth.
Hello. And I just have to challenge what you just said about us living in a capitalist society. This isn't capitalism. This is greedism. And under capitalism, if nobody wants to do a job, then they pay more until you get enough people to do the job. And right from the get-go with capitalism, they started with slave labor in the farm fields, you know, as far as economic slavery goes. They've never paid stoop labor what they should pay, you know, in order to get people to line up and want to do that job. And that has, my call has to do with so much with what the last callers have said, that money is at the bottom of this. There's corporate welfare. They're paying General Electric and Exxon and all these corporations. They're paying them welfare. You know, they're not paying any taxes at all, not sales tax, not income tax. And yet we are paying, are subsidizing these corporations. And there's no question that these corporations should continue to be subsidized while people starve. Yeah. This is not okay.
So Ruth wants to know, how come we don't cut corporate welfare, but we're going to cut welfare to poor people?
Well, darn good question. And I'm all for, I think, what Ruth would support, and that is fairly radical tax reform that would eliminate corporate welfare, would stop playing favorites among companies, as our current tax code does. And, you know, there seems to be at least a consensus in Washington to that general principle, but we don't see the Republicans who've insisted on tax reform, but not tax increases, who've insisted on tax reform, doing anything to lift a finger to see it happen. They were talking about it a year ago and 2 years ago and 3 years ago, but they've been silent over the past year. They're not talking about tax reform, for example, as a condition for their support for a government spending on October 1 or lifting the debt limit on November 1. They're just completely silent on the question. We should be frustrated.
Yeah. Randy in Key Wascom is with us. Hello, Randy.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I originally called about the farm bill, which isn't a farm bill since it's only 10 to 15% go to farmers. The rest is basically handouts. But when he was talking about the Dodd-Frank basically shores up the big banks and cuts off the small banks at the knees. Since the advent of Dodd-Frank, small banks have been going out of business, and they're the lifeblood of small business. So basically they've made the big banks, the Democrats have made the big banks much stronger and strangled off the small banks, which are going by the wayside, which is hurting the economy immensely.
All right. That's the Democrats' fault?
I'm not sure that Dodd-Frank is responsible for the difficulties that many small banks are having. The fact is, economic forces are more important than the public policy forces here. The small banks, of course, were heavily invested in real estate, and they suffered greatly. They didn't have the reserves that the large banks had to weather the storm. Even the large banks, of course, were endangered, and the federal government did bail them out. Of course, small banks did not get bailed out. But the bailout's different than Dodd-Frank. Dodd-Frank really isn't the central issue there.
We are talking with Stephen Smith, professor of political science and director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. We are talking about the politics of the economy and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now we are talking about the economy and wondering if you side with one party or the other when it comes to the approach on economic issues and fixing the economy. Is it the Republicans, the Democrats, or the Tea Party? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, Professor Smith, what are the divisions in the Republican Party over economic issues? The mainstream Republicans versus the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party?
That's right. You know, early in the summer, Speaker Boehner, presumably the leading Republican in Washington, said that his party wouldn't stand in the way of allowing the government to be funded or the debt limit to be increased. But over the course of the summer, he found that many Republicans within his own ranks, among the House Republicans, were saying, well, no, we've got to exercise maximum leverage here. And he's tried to work his way around this. Eventually, about 40 House Republicans signed a letter saying that they would not vote for a continuing resolution, that is, the legislation to allow the government agencies to be funded after October 1, they would not vote for it unless there was a provision to defund Obamacare. Well, that put Speaker Boehner in a difficult spot because he knows he can't get Democratic votes for his continuing resolution because of the spending level that he's proposing. And without those 40 Republicans, he's far short of the 218-vote majority he needs to pass anything in the House. So over the last couple of weeks, the leadership, Republican leadership, has tried to come up with some kind of way to weasel out of it. Maybe they thought if they could just force the Senate just to cast a vote on Obamacare, that would satisfy these 40 Republicans. And they said, no, that's not good enough. We actually have to have a provision that kills Obamacare. And as of last night, it looked like he was going to propose just that, being forced to do so, and then send the bill with that provision over to the Senate. And the Senate, of course, won't accept it. They'll pass maybe another version without that provision and be different in other respects, like provide for more spending. And we'll be at an impasse. It really turns on the ability of the House Republicans to get their act together. And over the last few months, it's clear that they can't. You know, there's a big difference over political strategy among House Republicans. The Tea Party guys and Speaker Boehner probably do not differ much in what they'd like to see in the long run. But they differ heavily on short-term strategy. The Tea Party guys are just uncompromising. But Speaker Boehner has to worry about the party's reputation. If the party is responsible for forcing government agencies to close down or creating some economic chaos because they failed to pass the debt limit, he knows his party is going to suffer badly in the polls. And the American people may hold that against the Republicans at the next election. The Tea Party guys say, well, we can't worry about the next election. We have to use our leverage now. We don't know what the elections will bring. We've been compromising too much for too long. We have to do it now. And that division of kind of the short-term versus the long-term, the electoral interests versus the policy interests, are dividing House Republicans today.
So what's the likelihood that we're going to have this impasse is going to mean, what, a government shutdown?
Yeah, I think we're now approaching the point where it's just a coin flip about whether or not we'll get funding in place by October 1. When we get to October 1, we might end up seeing day-to-day bills being passed, keeping the government open as they try to work out their differences. But right now it looks like there's no clear path, no obvious way to compromise their differences and get a regular, longer-term spending bill in place by October 1.
Hmm. So what does a government shutdown do to our economy?
Well, that's not good either. The last time that happened in a big way, you remember, was when Speaker Newt Gingrich was in place trying to get some leverage over then-President Bill Clinton. Speaker Gingrich and the House Republicans' reputation suffered very, very badly. It was the first step in a series of steps that led Gingrich to leave the speakership. It was that serious. And the Republicans remember that lesson. It's very much on Speaker Boehner's mind. But, you know, most of his party colleagues have been elected since then. The majority of them just over the last three or four elections. And so they're having a hard time learning those historical lessons. Most of them were elected to go and fight President Obama and the Democrats. And so they don't appreciate a speaker who seems quick to compromise and just muddle through these issues for the time being. Now, they're there to make the fight. And so, right now, those Republicans are meeting in Washington and trying to sort this out. My guess is that they'll, Speaker Boehner will say, well, okay, we're going to include the Obamacare cuts in the bill, but the Senate's not going to accept it. And at that stage, we must be willing to back off. Otherwise, we're going to get killed in public opinion polls, and we're going to lose control of this Congress. That argument might sway just enough of those conservative Republicans to say, okay, we'll get our vote and then we'll back down. But it's not clear at the moment that that's what's going to happen.
Wow. Diane in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Diane.
Morning. If Obamacare is so bad, the Republicans should let it go through, and then everybody would hate it, and then they would want to get rid of it. But if you don't give it a chance, you don't show if it's bad or good.
Well, you know, the Republicans are making a similar argument, maybe just the opposite one. They know that once Social Security was in place and Medicare was in place and Medicaid was in place and the food stamps program was in place, they actually became more popular, and it became almost impossible to kill them. So they figure that many of them are thinking that this is really their last chance to kill it. They think that once it's in place and once you have people on the insurance rolls who were previously unable to get health insurance, that you simply will not be able to take that away from them. And so you need to kill it before people have something to lose and people have a vested interest in it. So this is one reason why the Tea Party types in the House are feeling somewhat desperate at this moment to do something about Obamacare right away.
Yesterday, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew urged Congress not to wait until the last minute to act on the debt ceiling. He says or any kind of misstep could irrevocably damage the economy. And what are the chances we're going to come to an agreement on the debt ceiling?
Well, again, I hate to punt on the issue, but there's really no choice. The honest truth is this turns on the willingness of the House Republicans to compromise and to back off of their current arguments. until a couple of weeks ago, the Republicans were thinking that they would go after Obamacare on the spending bill before October 1, and that they would go after far, far deeper, like a $3 or $4 trillion spending cut, as a condition for approving the debt limit. Now that's all up in the air, and so we really don't know where that's going to go. But if they end up backing off a little bit to allow the spending bill to go through by October 1, you know for sure that they're going to insist on maximal leverage on the debt limit. And so I think that will shake up the markets, and the economy will suffer. And when the market declines, when interest rates go up, we all pay a price for that. And it's never really fully recovered.
Gary on Facebook says, the Democrats are killing economic development and the Republicans are killing wages and the rights of workers who have a job. Neither party has come to the realization that we first need to create wealth and then ensure that everyone gets their fair share. The sad fact is that we first need to actually produce something, and the Republicans have an edge there. The Democrats currently have absolutely nothing to offer and continue to self-destruct. We want to give us. We only have about a minute or so to go. Just your response to Gary's comment.
Nah, that's not true. both parties have reasonable, but very, very different visions about how to get from here to where Gary wants us to be. The Democrats would like a heavy investment in infrastructure, which they think is deteriorating and really cost the economy a lot. They would like serious tax reform to level the playing field in the business community. They would like to greatly increase our investment in education so that people were in a better position to get jobs. The Republicans have a very different vision of just radically cutting back on government and taxes, and to put more money in the private sector. So they both would argue, and rightly, that they have a plan. They're just diametrically opposed plans, which is causing the gridlock in Washington.
Well, I'm a little bit nervous about the road ahead, Professor Smith, but I'm glad you were here to help explain it to us.
My pleasure, Joy.
Stephen Smith is a professor of political science and the director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction and Robin Cherry for on-air production. Thank you for listening. If you want to vote in our poll, our online poll, you can go to WPR.org or the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.